Thought leaders, storytellers, and griots sharing personal highlights on Stories of the Week.
There have been a couple of people this week that have been celebrated in a major way for the work that they do in the spaces that they do as well. Achille Mbembe is an historian, a political philosopher and theorist. He is also the research professor of the history and politics at the Wits Institute for Social and Economic Research, which is called WISER, at the University of Witwatersrand. He has just received an award, which is called the Holberg Prize. Apparently, it is one of the largest international prizes awarded annually to an outstanding researcher in the humanities, social sciences, law, or theology. What does that mean? And when you win an award like this, what are you then expected to do with the award? Or can you take the money and run? Achille Mbembe is on the line right now. Achille, always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you so much.
So here we go, the Holberg Prize. It's a huge prize. How much is it worth, and what are you now expected to do with a chunk of money? Go on a long holiday at some beachfront in Bali?
I wish I could. No, I mean, look, beyond the money, I think the award is in recognition, not so much of my own contribution to the understanding of the protracted times we live in.
Sure.
I think it's a recognition of the kind of research we do here in South Africa and in the continent. That's how I see it. And it's it will help to focus the attention to our continent, maybe as a key epicenter of the planetary transformations going on right now, most of which require a thorough description and interpretation. That's how I see it.
Achille, when I was reading the document, which just is focused on the award and the kind of work that you did, I see that you really do. I mean, and we know this about the work you've done with regards to the French Institute and further afield in France as well, with regards to what we think about when we think about identity and the continent. But there are three areas that have been focused on, which I thought were fascinating, and perhaps you could just briefly tell us a little about all three. Necropolitics, which I can only assume has something to do with the politics of dying. I'm not sure. I may have that completely wrong. The universal right to breathe, and of course that would look at, I suppose, us having a right to fresh air and to clean air as well, or the earthly community. Talk to us about those three topics very briefly. If you can do it briefly is the question.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will try. Necropolitics, you are absolutely right, has to do with the politics of giving death, of deciding who must live and who must be put to death, which is the very definition of sovereignty. This is what was going on, for instance, here in South Africa under apartheid.
Yeah.
Apartheid was a way in which the state decided who should be exposed to premature death, who could live long, under what circumstances. And we see structures of necropolitics going on all around us, all over the world today. It's this capacity power has taken to basically redistribute life in a very unequal manner.
Sure.
And this takes many different forms, depending on where we are. It takes the form of a war. It takes the form of famine and disease, control of migrations, and things like that.
Prof, I want to jump in here, if I may. You may have heard a little bit of the interview we did earlier with Abahlali Base Mjondolo, and we were talking about assassinations, I mean, certainly assassinations in his community, would that be included? Because you talk about who must live and who must die within a sovereign state. Would you include something like that in that particular case as well?
I would include any kind of termination of life that is decided by the state, a specific state, using state mechanisms. I wouldn't just add, let's say, put under the term necropolitics, murders, banditry. It has to be done by the state, and it has to target very specific communities, generally on the basis of race, communities that are discriminated on that basis, like we saw in the U.S. Under slavery, or in Germany during the Holocaust.
Would you include
under the Nazis?
Would you include, for example, I mean, this is a fascinating focus, but would you include, for example, if we look in the Philippines, when there was a President Duterte was there, there was alleged massive assassinations of those who were considered to be drug dealers, who were alleged drug dealers as well.
Yes, in fact, there is a fascinating study that has just been published by a colleague on Philippines, which deals with the necropolitical power that was exercised in Philippines, not only recently, but also not so long ago, when the state was fighting against communism. Thousands and thousands of people were killed in the name of the struggle against communism. And that qualifies precisely as necropolitical.
So my last question with regards to that topic is, I'm assuming then that you're talking about direct killing. So, for example, in a country like South Africa, where our crime has just murders are extremely high, one can't say, well, if you were murdered, it may be because our police force is not doing the work that they should be doing, that this is happening. It would have to be a direct order, so to speak, from the state.
It has to be a direct order, a deliberate order from the state. As far as our crime statistics are concerned, of course, we know they are absolutely massive. People are being killed in South Africa in numbers that exceed, let's say, a number of wars actually going on. It's like a war situation, the crime situation in South Africa, but it's not sponsored directly by the state. So I wouldn't necessarily qualify it as a deliberate form of necropolitics.
Would war be considered it? Like
yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes, wars that are funded, sponsored by states, and which are targeting very specific
groups,
communities that are weakened and subjected to one form or the other of elimination.
Ashiel, tell us about the universal right to breathe as a concept.
You see, this came. This is a concept that I did invent during COVID. You remember, COVID was really about
breathing,
the inability to breathe.
Exactly.
Breathing is, I would argue, the very first manifestation of what it means to be alive. And it's also a site of, it should, in any case, be a site of radical equality, in the sense that you and I, we breathe the same amount of air. that you and I should be able to breathe the same quality of air.
Yes.
And that you and I should be, while we breathe, we breathe together and we share a common condition. So there's an element of community in the very act of breathing. But as you know, not all of us are afforded that right today.
Yeah.
Some people are exposed once again to premature forms of death. They live in under conditions where breathing is very difficult. And so I was arguing for a kind of right which is given to all, which is enjoyed by all, and which is an expression precisely of our common vulnerability and our common sharing of condition, which is not only reserved to humans.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Plants also breathe.
Sure.
Animals too.
So that universal right, I mean, it's an interesting one because it could apply to it could apply to climate change. It could apply to smog and terrible, terrible pollution, air pollution.
Yes.
It
yes.
could also apply to disease. It could apply to,
yes.
I mean, so there are various, the symptom is not being able to breathe, but the source could be really a huge variety of things.
Absolutely. Human things as well as things that have to do with the environment, with, you mentioned diseases, especially diseases that emerge at the interface of our encounter with the humans, with animals in particular. But it's also a very political act. You remember with George Floyd in America, when he was killed on a pavement in a city. Yes, of course. His last words were, "I can't breathe." So there are forms of racism which prevent us from sharing precisely that fundamental resource, which is air.
Sure.
But if we can study the current climate change precisely from the point of view of breathing and point of view of what prevents us, the living, from enjoying life and reproducing it in the long term.
Ashiel, we don't have much time left, but when I listen to you talk, I think that you are talking so much about politics and science, and yet the thing, of course, that is most potent is that you are a researcher in the humanities.
Yes.
And I think that that is something that well deserves to be flagged, because people are often saying, oh, the humanities are not important, the humanities are not important. But the very nature of the work that you're doing demonstrates how important the humanities are, don't they?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. You see, we can't do without the humanities. We impoverish ourselves if we believe that we can do without them. And therefore, the prize is also in recognition for the wealth of knowledge and wisdom which these disciplines bring to our communal life, our life in common.
Yes.
And therefore, here in South Africa, we really need to invest a bit more in that domain of knowledge, because it will help us to grow together and become wiser as a collectivity.
So to speak, hey?
Yes.
Ashiel, it's an absolute delight to talk to you, and thank you so much for giving us some insights. We want to congratulate you on the winning of this award. I have no doubt that it will feed into some really, really extraordinary research as we move forward. And Prof, we really look forward to seeing where that research is going. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very, very much. Bye.
We appreciate it. Prof. Ashiel Mbembe, he is an historian, a political philosopher, research professor at the history of history and politics at the Wits Institute for Social and Economic Research, or WISER, at the University of the Witwatersrand, winning this really massive award, the Holberg Prize, one of the largest international prizes awarded to outstanding research in the humanities, social sciences, law or theology. And really very, very exciting and interesting to hear some of his thoughts about necropolitics, the universal right to breathe, and indeed the earthly community. What are the ideas that we have as we think about these things and move forward? Kat saying that sometimes... the fundamental humanities are being threatened by AI and they make us lose our humanity. Not necessarily, Kat. I mean, there's some really, really good research around the positive sides of artificial intelligence and what it can do for us as well. But I have no doubt that Prof. Mbembe is looking at that space as well.
When South Africans think security, they think Trinidad.